Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 25 plus years, 30 years, I don't know at this point, of collecting films on obsolete formats. You could also think of this podcast as being about films from the VHS era, though we do not necessarily always watch them on VHS. And our film for this episode is Blood-Sucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh from 1990, and we watched it on VHS, getting it from Pleasant Dreams in the Polish Hill neighborhood of Pittsburgh. So, and we are currently, if you don't know, sitting in a house in Pittsburgh. So is this the most Pittsburgh episode of the podcast we've ever done?
I think so.
I think about it now, and I'm looking at the list.
Well, this must be the most Pittsburghiest Pittsburgh review. And Pittsburghers love to talk about Pittsburgh.
Pittsburghers do love to talk about. So we accidentally did Groundhog Day twice. How ironic.
But not set in Pittsburgh.
But, he's a Pittsburgh weatherman.
Oh, that's
and there's
true. And
B-roll shots of Pittsburgh. But at the beginning of the film.
This movie is firmly set in Pittsburgh.
Though. And it is shot in Pittsburgh.
Yes.
Pittsburgh.
And though we're not native Pittsburghers, we like to talk about Pittsburgh a lot.
Too. Yes. Well, yeah. You know, I think I like to say we've lived in Pittsburgh long enough. Moving here in the year 2000, which is 10 years after the direct-to-video release of Blood-Sucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh. That we can complain about new people.
Oh, that's true. We do
who
have.
Are moving here and messing that's up true. Pittsburgh and making this sort of beautiful, unique, doesn't look like any other American city that now seems like it's aspiring to look like Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, we can be as curmudgeonly as we want to now
about Pittsburgh.
About
yes.
Pittsburgh.
So and what a drinking game it would be for this podcast, how many times we say the word Pittsburgh. And you would be drunk by now if you've already decided to do that.
The thing I'll say about this movie, the two best things about it, is that it's set in Pittsburgh, and
yes.
It's spelled Pittsburgh right.
Yes.
So
yes, not everybody does that. Of course, we are the one Scottish spelling of Pittsburgh in the U.S. Everybody else does the German Berg, but we are Burgh. Actually. So this film from 1990, direct to VHS release, one of the things we found out as we were watching the film does not have an English language Wikipedia page.
So there's a French version of it.
Yes,
there's,
so you can
it looks
translate.
Like there's also a Russian version of it and a Polish version of it. But
of the
not,
Wikipedia page on.
But not
so
a
this,
US-based.
So this is a movie where we definitely have to do the plot summary of what this film is. Because, and there are streaming options available for this film, but I did not know that this film existed until I picked up the VHS tape in Pleasant Dreams, and I think I turned to John or Dusty and said, "What the hell is this?" And they were like, "I don't know. It says Pittsburgh on the box, though." And so I took it home.
You know, I'm a huge horror fan. I've probably watched thousands of horror films. I have no idea. I don't know that one. Like, I don't remember ever seeing it in, like, Blockbuster heads together. Like,
I produced it out of the basement tonight.
Yes.
And you were like, okay. So so you've known about this movie for exactly about 3 hours.
Exactly, yes.
And I bought it a few months ago, but here we are. So, okay, the plot summary of this film. There's a serial killer in Pittsburgh. Like, let me know when this conversation goes off the rails or I've forgotten something, because this movie has an insane plot.
Yes.
So, there's a serial killer on the loose in Pittsburgh. And yeah. From that point, we can go crime thriller, we can do a lot of things. But, so the serial killer in Pittsburgh kills people, removes parts of their organs.
Yes.
we'll talk about the maybe the kills. I don't even know what to do now. So okay, there's a serial killer on loose in Pittsburgh. There's these two deeply incompetent man baby, emotionally damaged detectives.
Yeah.
Who are assigned to the case, though they are completely incompetent in all shapes of the imagination. Though, you know, right now, like, was it last year or in 2023, the City of Pittsburgh Police Department solved only 31% of homicides in the city.
Yeah.
So these guys could still be working here,
yeah,
is what I'm saying. And so they're on the case, and somehow there's a connection to Las Vegas, because when the one detective...
Joe,
his wife left him, and because he had a sexual problem, which is a repeating joke, yeah, in the film. He goes to Vegas, and somehow the killer is probably from Vegas, and all the people are from Vegas.
They had the similar killings in Vegas.
And they had similar killings in Vegas, and he knew all the people from Vegas, but they're now all in Pittsburgh. I'm out of breath already, and we're like 10 minutes into the movie with the plot summary. This could be a 3-hour podcast for a completely unremarkable film.
What we do know is that when he was a cop in Vegas, there were similar murders, and he knew the people who were murdered. Mm-hmm. Now he's in Pittsburgh, murders start happening again, and he just so happens to also know
all of the people
who are being murdered, and some of them do have a Las Vegas connection.
And for some reason in 1990, as the population of Pittsburgh was plummeting, and that, you know, the city felt like you were experiencing the end of civilization, a bunch of people were moving from Vegas to Pittsburgh, apparently, in this reality. And so you have that. And then they get a... And they can't solve these murders, and the murders are super gory. The most remarkable thing about the film, the most famous thing about the film...
is Tom Savini.
Does the practical effects in this film.
Yeah.
And
if you're a horror fan, you have to know who Tom Savini is.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Pittsburgh himself. Practical effects wizard.
Yeah.
Super gory. Over the top. If you like the kills from Dawn of the Dead or something.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I just want some of that gore. Looks like in Pharaohs in Pittsburgh. Might be your movie. Anyway. So then this other detective comes from Vegas. Though she's not a detective, she's actually a meter maid, but she is way more competent than the cops.
So she's the daughter of his former partner in Vegas, and he's thought dead. His former partner's thought dead.
Yes.
And she comes to Pittsburgh because she thinks it's connected to her dad, and she wants to try to help solve the crime. But in Vegas, she is a meter maid.
A meter maid.
But in terms of we have these two bumbling cops. One is severely emotionally damaged because of when they were hunting down a suspect. He ended up falling in his blood, and he's like averse to
The guy several times.
Averse to gore and things
like
that.
Yeah, though there is this transcendently hilarious sort of blood slip and slide scene as he trips in the blood. Actually, he trips on the guy's ear that he shot off.
So
and then slides through the blood.
And so now we have, it's in Pittsburgh, these murders are happening. He's queasy. He doesn't want to be involved.
He pukes now, every time.
So the best part about this movie is just like the ridiculous nature of the crimes, because the killer literally has to bring a generator with him.
A gas electric generator.
For the crimes.
That often these very unsuspecting people in public places, often public places, are in the first kill not aware that this large, heavy gas electric generator is being hauled around.
Yeah.
Or the true star of this film might be the Doughboy statue in Lawrenceville at the corner of Penn and Butler.
Yeah.
or the Penn and Butler Y intersection, if you know it, if you're from Pittsburgh, you get to see a lot of that intersection in a very pre-gentrified Lawrenceville.
Yeah.
Which, when we moved to Pittsburgh in 2000, Lawrenceville was not a neighborhood you went to during the daytime.
Yeah.
Let alone the center for nightlife and entertainment and trendy restaurants.
And so, because it's good old dirty Pittsburgh, and it is actually old Lawrenceville, which was, yes, as you're saying,
rough.
A little rough. So it's actually prostitutes who are being targeted and killed in this area near Joe's apartment.
Yes.
And so the kills are because you need a generator with you.
Because you're killing people with electric, like, appliances. Yes. That's the other thing.
So we had a saw. We had
a circular saw.
A circular saw.
A shop vac.
A shop vac. Jackhammer.
A jackhammer.
One of those bush trimmers.
And a hedge clipper.
Hedge clipper. Towards the very end, chainsaw, which you think actually would have been easier to carry and take with you.
And it would be gas powered, a little loud, but then so's an electric generator.
But you also think, like, the killer chooses to use the chainsaw in their lair. Wouldn't you think that's where you'd have the generator with all the others?
Yeah, because you just get extension cords. But I think part of how the movie works, which, by the way, we're already derailed. We're not even halfway through this plot, people.
Yeah.
We're 12 minutes into this podcast almost. And we haven't finished explaining the plot because you haven't seen this movie and you might not be able to. The first scene, the first kill, you know, there is a great jump cut sequence of the killer activating the generator and then activating the circular saw to kill the lovers in the lovers lane.
I wonder if that was Schenley Park, because that Schenley Oval used to have, not Schenley Oval, Schenley Park had, like, a famous, was known for being, like, make-out areas in some areas of the park, because
it still is.
So here in Pittsburgh, Schenley Park is a large park that has different areas you can park in. And
one is known as a place where people go.
For hooking up at the time.
Yes. And still do.
And there's been some famous dealers that were caught in that.
One, yes.
One. But yes. Anyway.
So you do get a sense that this movie is absurd. Like, you're already, like, when the circular saw kill happens, which is within the first 5 minutes of the film, and then, you know, the police are there investigating, somebody sets up a snack wagon so that the cops, who are completely incompetent, can, you know, get their donuts and coffee, which is beautiful, happens. You're already like, all right, we are in an absurd world.
But you know what? In retrospect, the killer was taking the brain. I mean, it is hard to get the brain out, so
a circular saw would work for that. Chainsaw would work, too.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of apparatus. But anyway, so you already know you're in this absurd film, the absurd world, and you can just kind of enjoy it from that scene. Like, that scene works.
Yeah.
The first few scenes work. Anyway, so the kills, there's prostitutes. They believe through a series of leads and the knowledge that the daughter from Vegas who flew in, who's the meter maid, explains that it might be this killer, this crime boss named Jackie Cairo, who, of course, lives in Egyptown in Pittsburgh.
Which does not exist.
Does not exist, no. Pittsburgh at times can be insufferably white. Yeah. And that we wouldn't have any place with as many interesting restaurants as are in the Egyptown in Pittsburgh these days.
The killer also leaves notes that are in hieroglyphics.
Yes, and of course the police take forever to even... And she needs to come from Vegas to read the hieroglyphics and translate. So then they go into Egyptown, and then there's this, like, part where there's, like, four subplots happening at the same time.
We should also mention that they spend a lot of time with the one Detective Sweeney, his wife.
Yes, who's trying to quit smoking and has a voice box, which is a joke throughout the film.
The other thing about it, just, like, the over-topness of it, like, when you first meet her... There's literally, like, even cigarettes piled up in the sink.
There's cigarettes in the sink, cigarettes on the stairs, and then she is on, like, a Stairmaster, chain-smoking, yelling at her husband as she's chain-smoking on the Stairmaster with her voice box.
We spend, like, an inordinate amount of time with this woman.
Yes, and then there is a long, like, she tries to actually quit smoking. I think they might have read the Stephen King short story, Quitter's Inc., which would have been out before. And it's, like, really over-the-top, incredibly violent quit-smoking program that she goes through. There's a lot of sight gags with that.
They do the whole, violent imagery from,
Clockwork Orange.
Clockwork Orange, and then they,
Then there's physical
cattle prods, and then she's
by a large African-American gentleman.
We'll talk about the social implications of this movie. But later. Anyway, so also a large chunk of the film is spent learning about this woman.
Yes, we learn about this woman. The killer is killing someone. The detective, the meter maid from Vegas is going undercover.
Yeah.
With Jackie Cairo. The other cops are doing something else at this point in the movie. Yeah. My eyes were glazing over. Again, we are now 16 minutes of this podcast. We are not done figuring out the plot. And then we realize that the person we think was the killer was not the killer. We meet this wholly new person who is the killer.
Like 5 minutes before you find out they're the killer.
Yes. Yeah. Which is a Joe Bob Briggs rule that they're violating.
Yes.
You never introduce the killer in the third act.
Yes. And they,
but the killer shows up in the third act. And it's like, oh, it's the killer. And then you find out that it is like an ancient Egyptian mummification, rebirth, send people to hell for all eternity in this giant blood bathtub that you need virgin's tears. Which conveniently... the meter maid is a virgin.
Dee Dee is a virgin.
A virgin, yeah. And you find out, again, as she is crucified to a bunch of pallets in the secret lair with the giant blood thing. And this, like, henchman who's wearing a fez. And then her dad is still alive, but it was being kept in a sarcophagus. But he's in really rough shape, and she wants the killer wants to send him to hell forever in the bloodbath with the virgin tears. And then the cops show up.
Yeah.
And also the wife who's trying to, Sweeney's wife who's trying to quit smoking show up. And then there's a final chase sequence. And then the killer gets killed.
The killer getting killed was against...
The killer getting killed was
very
also...
very satisfying.
Very satisfying. Very... only Tom Savini could have made that work.
Yeah.
And you find out that the Detective Joe with PTSD actually becomes a true protagonist because he is cured of his queamishness.
Yeah.
Queamishness. Queasiness? Queamish? Queamish? Is that a word? Did I make a word up?
You did.
Or did I, like, just totally miss... Western squeamishness. That was what people in Western Pennsylvania did. We just, like, can't handle the English language. I've lived here too long.
The blood was slippy.
The blood was very slippy. The blood is, and but he gets over his squeamishness.
And then there was a neighbor being nebby.
Squeamishness. And manages to not only kill the villain in an incredibly violent way, but then actually truly enjoy... being completely covered in ketchup and... Well, how does Tom Savini make
his
blood?
I don't think he uses ketchup. I think he uses, like a oil-based stuff.
Oh.
So we're here in Pittsburgh, so, like, Heinz ketchup would be...
It would have made sense.
Yeah. I mean... it's like a Karo syrup kind of stuff.
I know where Tom Savini lives. Like, we could just go knock on his door. Like, maybe not this late.
I don't think he'd appreciate it, just random people showing up.
But actually, he might.
Anyway.
From what I've heard about Tom Savini,
don't encourage...
They don't know where he lives. They're not friends with Ed.
But anyway...
Because he was Ed's neighbor. That's the Tom Savini... Did I ever tell you Ed's Tom Savini story?
Let's not talk about it now.
I'm tired of talking about this movie already. We're 20 minutes in. That's the plot of this movie that you might never see. and you probably haven't seen, and we haven't heard of before this. Yeah.
Anyway, with it, I will say, though, the killer does use a nail gun to crucify Dee Dee, which is convenient.
And you got the generator.
You would need the generator for that.
Which is one of the nice little savvy things in this film, because a part of that, and it's almost like Edgar Wright-esque. Mm. The way that, you know, in Shaun of the Dead, when Shaun gets and puts his all stuff together,
yeah.
Or they get the cricket bats, or they're getting ready to move, and there's this mantra, quick, and then thing. It does that.
Yeah.
And then the killer does that, and then Dee Dee doesn't get killed.
Yeah.
Which is like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. We were set up for something.
Yeah.
Rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
A little cinematic rope-a-dope. I like it.
Absolutely.
So that's fun. The fact that the detective is a true protagonist in that they must overcome something in themselves to achieve their objective, which is catching the blood-sucking feral.
It is also fun, as I mentioned before, to see... Well, actually, it wasn't a feral, though. So the title of this film is...
Oh, yeah. Are there any blood-sucking pharaohs in Pittsburgh?
There's not. No.
In blood-sucking pharaohs in Pittsburgh.
The killer is not a vampire. I mean, blood-sucking, you would think.
Vampire. Yeah.
There's not a pharaoh. It's just more Egyptian-themed. but it is set in Pittsburgh. So, I mean, that's the one.
Yes, Pittsburgh. That is honest. And I will say, I think we agree our favorite part of the film is dirty. We get glimpses of the dirty old Pittsburgh that we moved to.
Yeah.
That we found infinitely charming.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's hard for people now. Like, we were actually just watching the local PBS station did a little thing about a hotel here for people who are cyclists, who are taking all the trails around here. And, you know, it's like everyone was talking about, just like, I never knew Pittsburgh was this kind of gem. And Pittsburgh just changed so much. And we kind of forget that when the mills closed, right, Pittsburgh spiraled pretty badly. And we were at actually a point where the city was under state control because of financial issues.
Yeah.
And it was like a massive mess. There wasn't industry here. There wasn't a lot happening. So there was, like, a lot of abandoned buildings. There's a lot of urban decay. Homes in Squirrel Hill that are probably now $500,000 or $1 million were going for, like, $30,000, $40,000, you know. So it was in Lawrenceville, which does have million-dollar homes now, it was, like, $5,000 for a house back
then,
right?
You could buy a million-dollar home for $5,000. But you'd have to live there.
Yeah. So it was, like, interesting to see, like, that Pittsburgh. And that Pittsburgh did definitely have violence, did definitely have prostitution, did definitely have drugs and all this other stuff, you know.
But interesting architecture, and there were independent, unique businesses and things that you could experience in this town.
Yeah.
That were old, that, you know, family owned, all these things that, like, oh, you can't get this anywhere else. Only Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we were.
And now, again, we're trying to become, I won't say actually Columbus, Ohio, we're trying to become suburban Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it is a weird change, because we're getting a lot
but
of
so that was thoroughly enjoyable
that was
for
thoroughly
us.
Enjoyable.
It's like, oh, that's Liberty Avenue. Those telephone poles and that retaining wall are still there.
Yeah.
Like, that was a really exciting moment for us
debating,
in this,
like,
scene where they're driving, and I'm like, damn, you know.
And we were debating, like, I think that's Glifty's. Is that Glifty's up there? Is that the
yes? That's a restaurant that we used to love. That's not here anymore. But I'm pretty sure they were having dinner in Galifti's one night.
So that was fun. And they filmed it
at Metropool,
which was a famous place to go see bands. Which is now luxury condos.
But it was a gloriously 90s deindustrialized space. But a lot of this film was shot in Lawrenceville in the Strip District.
Yeah.
If you know those neighborhoods in Pittsburgh, you're like, oh! So that's fun. Tom Savini does some great work in this film.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun to watch, and the gore is so over the top. And the film does have that kind of 80s Bloom County wacky but very adult sense of humor that I miss.
Yeah.
There are elements of that, and I will say, until they get to Egypt Town, the film is kind of enjoyable.
You like the Egypt Town component of it?
No, that's where it stops.
Oh, that's where it
that's
stops.
That's, for me, the first, almost, what, hour of the film, the first two acts.
Yeah.
Where they're these, you have incompetent cops, you have these, this, you know, killer who's got a lot of creativity, and people who die in just really over-the-top
ways.
With a lot of splatter. I mean, you know, like, whatever Tom Savini's blood mixture is, I mean, it was in something with, like, a hose. I mean, they were just... And so that's a lot of fun. I mean, some of the jokes are sort of like, okay, there's Blazing Saddles. You couldn't make that today.
Yeah.
There is some of that. And then when they get to Egypt Town, the stereotypes become even less fun.
Yeah.
Not the stereotypes
are ever fun, but yeah.
Not the stereotypes were ever fun, but... Though there's part of it that's almost like, are the Arab stereotypes so stupid that they almost can't be racist? Like, is it possible to be so stupid?
Yeah.
Because it's so stupid and over the top.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just... So there's that... The suddenly the film just grinds to a halt where you have, like, four subplots happening at the same time.
Yeah, and there's this whole, like, sequence of her, Dee Dee, at this, like, seedy hotel that's just, like, not even needed, really, to be honest with you. I agree with you. It's almost like the wackiness kind of goes away.
Yes, the sense of fun kind of goes away, especially since you're also... The only thing you can have fun with at that point is making fun of this, like... And, like, it's not just even, like, Arab-American stereotypes, but it's, like, a not even Abbott and Costello... Not even second grade level understanding of ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Is where the sort of visual vocabulary for those stereotypes comes from.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, this isn't funny. Like, you could have just had weird people.
Yeah.
You could have just had, without the Egypt theme.
Yeah.
You could have just had weird people.
Yeah.
Or funny people. Or just dangerous personalities, but you have these, like, really, really dumb, stereotypes.
Yes. Yeah.
That aren't even relevant to, like, how that part of the world would have been, even in 1990, or I think people's understanding of them. Or maybe people really were that stupid back then. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, so then that happens, and, yeah. But I had... There were fun elements early in the film.
I will say I like if it's okay to reveal who the killer is, and so this will be...
Well, actually, so here's the thing. People want to watch the film.
Yeah.
You don't meet the killer until you meet the killer, so it's the killer's a woman.
Yeah, which is kind of fun.
And there's assassins who are women.
Yeah.
It has a team of female assassins.
So actually... The best actor in the film is the killer, right? She does actually a really good job in her role.
Yes, and is one of the few people... I mean, this is how off the map, off the radar, Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh is. Most of the actors, if you go to IMDb and look this film up, most of the lead actors, their profiles do not have pictures.
Yeah. Yes.
The actress who plays the killer in this film has a picture. Of course, that was because she was also in a lot of movies and is still in a lot of movies And by saying movies, we're talking about pornography movies. It was a porn actress, is a porn actress, who was doing that thing where you can, through horror, get to the sort of legitimate, scare quotes, part of the film industry through doing horror. She's making that move. And was in movies.
Yeah.
And is now in those other kind of movies.
But I will say, again, like, she actually did a good job with the role.
She was a great job in the role, she was the most convincing.
She initially, you meet her as a bumbling waitress, and she actually is a really ends up being a really good killer. But the weird thing for me, though, is like that shock value of that the killer is this nice person is like really diminished, because it's like you just meet the waitress and 5 minutes later you find out that she's the killer. It would have been more helpful if she actually had been in the beginning of the film.
Yeah.
And you grew to love her as the bumbling, cute, fun waitress. On roller skates. And you're like suddenly like, oh my gosh, she's this deranged killer who's doing all these
who things. Has assassins, who is like, doing some sort of like...
And somehow knows this ancient Egyptian thing.
Can write in hieroglyphics.
And she can create this pool of blood based on her victims that disintegrates you, which the effect for that was fun.
Yes.
And condemns you to hell. Somehow she knows how to do all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Forever.
But she was fun. Like, I think that part was fun, that it was a female killer.
So there are fun elements of this film.
Yeah. Do you want to go to the...
Yeah, let's get to the big five. It's weird how, like, the bad films sometimes in this podcast are the ones where we really have to, like, let's pump the brakes. Let's not do an hour-long podcast. So the big five questions. Is it camp, retro, classic, or just an old movie? That's question one.
So I think with what you're saying about the Egypt town, and then again, as Pittsburghers, we're like, there's no such thing as Egypt town. But anyway, I think if... Before it got to Egypt town, I would have said camp. Now I just think it's an old movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree with that. And of course, part of the reason for that is question two, what about the sort of social political distance from 1990 to 2025? There's other jokes in this film. There are other jokes in this film that really push the boundary of, I think, it's not even political correctness. It's just basic good taste.
Yeah.
And punching down at people who have less social power and prestige. You know, whether it's because Joe has a sexual problem.
Yeah.
Or that, you know... Yeah, I mean, there is really racist African-American stereotype sight gag.
Yeah.
In the film when... Sweeney's wife is trying to quit smoking. There is just stuff like that.
Yeah.
That sort of is like...
So, it's always interesting because, you know, like, they always say comedy is so hard to write, right? Like, good comedy is so hard to write. And you go back to, like, Shaun of the Dead. That is such a fun, funny...
Horror comedy.
And I think there's a lot of...
With a plot you can describe in like 3 minutes.
Yes. Yes. 100%. So I think, you know, like this time in horror was a lot like... So it had been Freddy Krueger time, right?
Yeah.
So like everybody... Because this film was made in the 80s, but released...
88.
But released in 90, 91.
Yeah.
So you would have had everybody wanting to be like Nightmare on Elm Street, where it's like schlocky and it's silly and you're making kind of like these jokes. And he's like, oh man, when it's bad... Like, this is just bad. And you feel like it's bad. And I think you're... saying it punching down, I think that's what makes it bad. It's like they're punching down in a situation.
Yes.
Where there's actually like kind of a lot of stuff that you could have kind of made fun of without going into stereotypes.
Yeah.
You know,
just the bumbling cops are great.
Yeah.
You know, and that none of the police, the police force has no adults. Yeah. The Pittsburgh police have no adults right. in this film. Which is great, you know, that's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Again, the over-the-top kills and the over-the-top, like, you can't even get grossed out by it.
Yeah.
Or be, like, truly scared by it because yeah. Tom Savini did such an amazing job.
Yeah.
Of, he didn't crank that amp to 11. He cranked that amp to like 15 in yeah. places in this film. And it's so, it's yeah. just funny.
And there's actually, I guess, some scenes that were cut to get the R rating. The gore scene, some of the
oh,
gore scenes.
Oh, that's a tragedy.
And I'm sure those don't exist anywhere. But like, to you mentioning in like, in sense of like Blazing Saddles, for example, like, you know, part of it, though, is Blazing Saddles couldn't be made now, but the racist jokes that happened in Blazing Saddle were specifically to point out how ridiculous racism is.
Yes, right? Yes.
This, no.
No, it's just like, those people aren't human.
Yeah.
They have masters and spells and
yeah.
whatever.
Yeah. So I think with that, and I think, like, I think that's actually probably why it's not a cult classic, right? Because it's just yeah. not... It's kind of, like, weirdly paced. It has way too much going on. We always joke about the Pearl Harbor film that, like, Pearl Harbor...
Markle Bay's Pearl Harbor, specifically.
Just has so much going on in it. It's like everything in the kitchen sink is in that film.
Yes, and how could those two guys be in every possible situation in one day?
Yes.
They're in the hospital. They're cutting boats open that sank. Yeah. They're doing all this other stuff.
Yeah. It feels like that. It just feels like there's so much going on in that film that's not even needed.
No.
People would have been just happy to see a lot of fun kills and the melting bloodbath at the end. It's almost actually reminds you of Raiders of the Lost Ark when they open the Ark and people melt.
Yes.
That melting.
That melting thing. Which, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark has its own yeah. issues with the portrayal yeah. of brown people.
But
there's enough in that movie that you can, like, okay.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
know.
Well, I was just saying that the effects yeah. are almost as cool.
But the effects are almost as cool.
As that. But I think that's just because
that
the
same
humor,
exoticism,
the humor, sorry, the humor, it's just kind of off. Type of humor.
Yeah.
You know what I would have loved to have seen, though? Like, we have so many friends who grew up in Pittsburgh and are just, like, Pittsburghers, and there's just something about the salt of the earth Pittsburghers that I love. I wish there was, like, a character like that in this film.
You know, the two women who work at the morgue.
Oh, that's true. But they were so brief.
They were so brief.
Yeah.
And they were so much fun.
Yeah, that's true.
And I just remember every time when we moved to this city, every waitress looked like those women.
Yeah, that is true.
And it was the best.
Yeah.
They were the best. So we talked a lot, question three, about the technical distance, whether it's the effects or the living yeah. technology.
I think the effects were good, but you can definitely...
The effects were incredible.
But
they're practical effects. There's yeah. no CGI.
Yeah.
There's no animation. So that all looks super good.
You know, I mean, of course, it doesn't have computers. You really don't
no
see,
cell
like,
phones. There's a phone booth is an important what, part yeah. of the film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you definitely know that it's made in the
80s. Yeah. Which is, again, nostalgic. But that's part of the thing. Again, here's the other thing. If you're not from Pittsburgh and you're listening to this podcast... I don't know if there's anything in this movie to appeal. Unless you're like a Tom Savini super fan and you yeah. want to be a Tom Savini completist.
Yeah.
Which is also probably more a Pittsburgh thing than anything else.
Yeah.
If you're not from Pittsburgh, I don't know if Bloodsucking Pharaohs in Pittsburgh has anything to offer you. What was it like to watch this film on VHS? Well, it was a direct to VHS.
It was direct to VHS. Also, it wasn't rewound, and so when we put it in, you got it had to go through that,
and then our machine spit the tape out, and then not that we weren't committed to the podcast, it was like, who's going to walk across the living room and push the tape back in the thing? But I mean, I don't think this tape was a rental copy. Actually,
it actually wasn't in bad condition
from Lee's Video. from maybe Anderson, Indiana, maybe?
We didn't really have to worry about tracking with it.
We didn't have to worry about I don't think a lot of people watch this movie.
No.
I wouldn't recommend it to a friend. I wouldn't even recommend it if I don't know who you are and you're listening to this podcast. Not recommending this movie. Not a lot. So it looked good.
Yeah.
And it was definitely shot cheaply. I mean, I guess it's almost like one of those other things, and I worry, you know, if we ever trade our 1080p 2008 TV for whatever we get in the living room whenever our 2008 TV finally dies.
Yeah.
And can we hook up all of these devices to whatever is going to be available when that happens? What things look like, what things are going to look like in 4K, you know? Yeah. Like maybe we just need to get some contact paper and put it over the screen or something, that clear stuff we used to like laminate our book covers with. It was shot cheaply.
Yeah.
And so maybe you kind of need to watch something that was shot cheaply on a cheap medium.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, like maybe if you're eating caviar, maybe you don't put it on a Ritz. Maybe there's like a fancier cracker out there for you.
Yeah.
And so it has that element. So, yeah. But it looked good.
Yeah.
It looked good, and I think as a work of late 80s, 1990 specific nostalgia, the medium fits the old cars and the dirty old Pittsburgh. Question 5. Will we ever watch this movie again?
No. But I unless we're like 80... And we're like, what is this one about again?
And the tape still works. And we still have a working VCR in 40 years.
The one thing I will say about it, though, is Pittsburgh is a big, small city. So the chief of police actually was an actor on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
He played several people who worked on this film worked on Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood.
And so he was the cook. And then the guy who played Cairo, the red herring.
The red herring villain was in Do the Right Thing and had bit characters in other films.
But he was also one of the Raider zombies in Day of the Dead or whatever. So he was in some zombie films that are from Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So in the sense of that kind of stuff is fun. Like, okay, they were in that.
I could watch some of the kills again.
Yeah.
But I don't think I could watch this whole movie again. I don't think I could dedicate another 89 minutes of my life.
If on YouTube the kills are on, that's what's worth watching is the kills.
Yeah.
I would not watch this movie again. Almost the only way maybe I would watch it again is to fast forward through
a bunch of parts. Yeah, I think that would be it for me. I would watch the first maybe 40 minutes uninterrupted and then, oh, wait, that was a fun scene. Okay.
Right.
That was a fun scene. Okay.
Oh, wait,
let's watch the last little bit here.
It's the pool of blood. All right, they're going to start melting people. Like, that's
yes.
That's what I would say. No, there wasn't anything really for it that, you know, sometimes with these older films, and the challenge of watching older films is that they're made at a time and a place, and kind of our views have changed, filmmaking views have changed, you know, society has changed so much. And sometimes when we're watching these films, you're like, ugh, but here's like, maybe here was the redeeming component of it. I don't know if there's any really redeeming component.
Yeah, or you could even like to look back at something sometimes and say, okay, this is an important, in a way, historical record. This is, and you think about it with the auspices of, oh, this is how people thought and saw the world, and we know more now. Which is a huge premise of this podcast.
Yeah.
Again, other than looking at old Pittsburgh buildings, that some of which are actually still there.
Yeah.
And going, oh, look at that. I know where that is.
Yeah.
Beyond that, there's not a whole lot. This movie, this is a startling point.
Because there's other films with better kills, other films with better plot lines.
Yeah.
And better Tom Savini films, right? Films
that
have Tom Savini. So there's actually no way, no reason to recommend it, and really no reason to revisit it.
Yeah. Is this the most hometown film I mean, that's the other thing is, like, you know, we're probably, Pittsburgh is a big, small town. We're probably no more than 3 degrees of separation from every local person who worked on this film.
This is true.
But what a damning conclusion. And on that note,
bye. Bye, everyone.